Hello, I'm Keith Parent, and welcome again to another edition of Real Time China from the studios of China Radio International in Beijing. Well, it's really nice to have you with me for the next 30 minutes of news and views from China. Coming up on today's program, following our bulletin of national news, China strives to newly add 9.5 million jobs, family planning in Anhui, and more public involvement in administration of state affairs. We have this and much more, so don't touch that dial. First, however, we cut to the CRI newsroom for the latest news about China.
Thank you, Keith. Chinese Premier Zhu Rongji says China welcomes foreign experts and overseas Chinese to participate in the country's economic development process. Meeting foreign experts who have been working in China for a long time, Zhu Rongji says China's economy is keeping up a good momentum and the society is stable. He invites more foreign experts and overseas Chinese to come to China to witness the extraordinary progress in the country firsthand and make their contributions in bringing it even further. The Standing Committee of China's top legislature, the National People's Congress, says deputies' proposals at last year's NPC session have all been properly dealt with. A total of 4,200 pieces of proposals on criticism had been raised during the fifth session of the 9th NPC last March, the largest number since the first session of the 9th NPC. Sources say most major issues concerning national economic and social development were resolved through various seminars and open meetings. An official from China's Ministry of Labor and Social Security says individual businesses and private citizens are not permitted to hire foreigners. The statement is in response to reports that some foreign housekeepers and domestic helpers might be working in coastal Chinese cities. He says it is illegal for them to do so. Under Chinese law, foreigners can only take up jobs that are special in nature. The Chinese government encourages foreigners to work in positions where there is a shortfall of Chinese personnel. The official added that foreigners who wish to work in China must first apply to Labor and Social Security departments for permission. The General Administration of Customs has released figures showing China's imports from the world's 9 trading partners, including Japan, the United States, the ASEAN and the European Union, all rose in 2002. China registered a double-digit increase in its trade volume with the major trading partners last year. Japan remained China's largest source of imports, followed by the European Union and China's Taiwan. Major goods China imported last year were automobiles and parts, cameras and films, machinery and electronic products, and chemical products. China's official Xinhua News Agency says the current falling consumer prices are within the normal range. A Xinhua article says although China's consumer price index has fallen for 14 consecutive months, it cannot be said that the Chinese economy is suffering from deflation. The article says prices of consumer goods in December 2002 dropped by 0.2% from the 2000 level. The fluctuation remains within the range of 1%, which is internationally recognized as price stability. The drop in commodity prices was brought on by tariff reductions, which were lowered from 15% in 2001 to 12% in 2002, following China's WTO entry. It also resulted from deeper reforms within the country's former monopolies of power, transportation, and telecommunications industries. The chairman of the American Chamber of Commerce in Hong Kong, James Thompson, says he expects Hong Kong's economy to rebound this year. During the press interview, he predicted that the region's economy will perform better with a GDP growth of at least 4% in 2003, spurred by improving domestic demand, confidence and investment, along with strong export growth. The chairman believes the global economy as a whole is showing signs of going up, which will certainly benefit Hong Kong. Thompson also sees the economic integration of Hong Kong and the Chinese mainland as providing an expanded economic base and many new opportunities for Hong Kong. The Hong Kong official says the region's customs made significant achievements in cracking down on copyright piracy and the smuggling of cigarettes, fuel and drugs last year. Commissioner of Customs and Excise Raymond Wang explains the department has enhanced its intelligence collection and analysis, which has effectively contained smuggling and copyright piracy. The commissioner adds that trade and tourism will continue to be Hong Kong's most important economic drivers in the years to come. Both Chinese and foreign airlines have prepared for the upcoming Spring Festival. Air transport has already entered the Lunar New Year peak season, with passengers expected to reach around 8.7 million over 2 weeks. More than 5,100 flights will be added to the schedules of 10 Chinese airlines, including Air China, China Eastern, China Southern and Xiamen Airlines. With increasing numbers of Chinese spending their holidays abroad, foreign airlines are also very busy over the Spring Festival period. Airline sources say Turkey has become a popular destination for Chinese tourists, as well as a transit point for European destinations. Tickets to Southeast Asian countries are very popular among Chinese, especially northerners. Northern European countries are increasingly attractive to Chinese. The Scandinavian airline system lowered ticket prices by $187 and the flights are 95% booked. As a large number of Chinese are returning from the United States for the Spring Festival, 80% of Northwest Airlines flights to Beijing have been booked. You're listening to CRI News. China Radio International received a record 1.17 million letters from its overseas listeners in 156 countries and regions in 2002. With China playing an ever greater role in a global community of nations and enjoying booming economic growth, more and more people around the world are tuning in to CRI. Feedback from the listeners is invaluable in helping our station consistently improve the programs to better meet the interests of the audience. CRI broadcasts in 43 languages, including Standard Chinese and 3 Chinese dialects. Construction of the Olympic project is due to begin soon. The contracts are open to public tenders, and it is estimated that the bidding will be finished by September, while major construction will kick off by the end of the year. The project consists of building 37 stadiums, a conference center, as well as commercial and entertainment venues. The entire project should be completed between the years 2006 and 2007. Since the 16th National Congress of the Chinese Communist Party was held in Beijing last November, the government has taken measures to expand public supervision and political transparency. However, an article in the Guangming Daily argues that some public hearings held by the government to promote interaction with the citizens are pointless. Why, the article says, some of the topics for discussion are of little interest to ordinary people, so government should think about what kind of transparency and about what subjects citizens want to talk about. It points out that people care most about things that affect their everyday life. Government officials need to make sure their meetings with ordinary people discuss these practical matters rather than be little more than mere window dressing. And that's the news from CRI. Back to you, Keith.
Welcome back. If you've just tuned in, this is Real Time China coming to you from the studios of China Radio International in Beijing. China's Minister of Labor and Social Security has said the country will strive to create 9.5 million new jobs this year. But what are the foundations for this aim? And how can the Chinese government guarantee that the figure is achieved? Here's our own CRI's Wang Lei with some answers from government officials and business people.
An official from the Ministry of Labor and Social Security, Wang Yingcai, said the goal of creating 9.5 million new jobs this year is based on China's overall economic situation.
China has a sound macroeconomic environment. In recent years, China's national economy has maintained a growth rate of over 7%, while the growth in 2002 alone was nearly 8%. Sound, rapid, and stable economic development is the foundation for increasing job opportunities.
Wang Yingcai says another guarantee for the new jobs is that China will devote its attention to service industries and encourage the growth of the private sector. The official says many jobs will be created during this process. Over the last 10 years, the number of people working in the service industry as a percentage of the total workforce steadily increased from 19 to 28%. Wang Yingcai says the social environment already facilitates the achievement of the jobs goal. In recent years, China's employment system has undergone serious structural changes. workers are more willing to take part-time, seasonal, or temporary jobs. The Chinese government has played its role by promoting the growth of privately operated economies. Take Qi Zhenyu, for example. He once worked in a state-run unit and opened his own company in 1994. He's now manager of the Beijing-based enterprise consulting company. Qi Zhenyu is very optimistic about his company's development.
It is government policy to encourage the development of individual and privately operated firms. This creates a good environment for running companies. I now have a generous income, and my company has expanded from just a few people to over a dozen. I believe this trend will continue.
To achieve the goal of creating 9.5 million new jobs, the Chinese government will also provide free vocational training to laid-off workers. Meanwhile, companies who employ laid-off workers will enjoy preferential tax and loan policies. Wang Lei, CRI News.
China's birth rate has declined dramatically over the past two decades, largely due to the one-child-per-family policy, one of the state's most important. But how is the policy implemented in the countryside, where two-thirds of the population live in less developed areas? Our reporter Wang Jing recently visited East China's Anhui Province, one of the country's biggest agricultural bases. She now files this report on local family planning.
This is one of the most popular singing and dancing team from Thousandhui Shi County. This amateur group has given many performances on the topic of family planning, covering not only state population policy, but also knowledge of reproductive health. These days, instead of delivering sermons on family planning policy, the workers in charge of its implementation have taken a different approach, such as setting up the amateur singing group who tours the villages and puts on educational shows. There are also free lectures, VCDs and posters aiming at increasing public awareness of family planning, sex education and use of contraceptive devices. Meanwhile, many women tests, including IUD checks, are spreading across rural areas. The country women told me how grateful they are to have such services.
They told me if my back hurts, I can turn to them to have the IUD removed.
We know more about reproductive health thanks to the various activities and educational projects they run.
They told us we should use different towels to wash our face, buttocks and feet. They showed us what to do and how to prevent diseases.
The change is brought about by the reform on work style, which focuses on service providing instead of administrative orders. Many projects concerning reproductive health have been carried out throughout China since the reform was adopted in the year 2000. Director of Family Planning Commission of Anhui Province, Chen Zhaojun, has much to say on this.
Our grassroots working staffs are changing their ways. They realize they are not the masters of the program, but rather public servants. They provide information and consultancies on reproductive health. We've replaced over 10,000 staff with people with special technical training to bolster our service team.
He says the service-oriented methods also bring them closer to public. A number of grassroots family planning workers have been elected as village head by the villagers. Wang Jing, CRI News.
And if you've tuned in, you're listening to Real Time China coming to you from the studios of China Radio International in Beijing. The week-long annual legislative session of the Zhejiang Provincial People's Congress ended a few days ago in the provincial capital of Hangzhou. It presented an even more promising picture for the province's democracy and economic and social development. Our own Xin Ting has the story.
In China's political system, the National People's Congress is the country's top legislature. And People's Congresses at the provincial and lower levels are the local organs of state power. They are established through democratic elections,
and usually have a term of office for 5 years. The first session of the 10th Zhejiang Provincial People's Congress was held from the 16th to the 23rd of this month in the provincial capital of Hangzhou. It was attended by over 600 deputies from across the province. A major task of this year's session was to vote for a new team of provincial leaders who have been charged with the mission of steering the local economic and social programs for the next 5 years. 10 years ago, the province adopted a system of inviting a group of citizens from all walks of life to attend the meeting as observers. This year, 91 such observers heard the work reports made by the provincial administrative and judicial bodies. They were also invited to voice their opinions on political, economic, cultural and social issues. Xiao Zhong from the Provincial People's Congress Standing Committee is responsible for soliciting comments and suggestions from the observers.
The goal of our having observers in the annual legislative meeting is to further cement our relations with the people and provide more channels for the free airing of public opinions. The proposals made by the observers will all be handed over to the Congress deputies for examination and discussion.
21-year-old Li Song from the Zhejiang Broadcasting and Television College was the youngest observer.
I was chosen by the Provincial College Students Association. I was quite nervous when I sat in the meeting hall, but at the same time very excited and proud. I could hardly believe that an ordinary student like me could participate in such an important political conference and express my opinions on any issue I care for.
In the past, the observers were usually chosen through recommendation by grassroots level units and various social organizations. But starting this year, any citizen over 18 can apply to be an observer. 66-year-old Cui Yansheng is a retired engineer from a factory in Hangzhou. He applied last year and is the first person to be approved as an independent observer. During the meeting specially held for the observers, he presented several proposals dealing with issues of concern to ordinary people, such as high housing prices, the re-employment of laid-off workers, and late payment of wages.
I'm always very interested in state affairs and have attended some 20 public hearings held by provincial and municipal governments. But I feel most honored and lucky to be attending this legislative meeting. I think this demonstrates a new leap forward in our building democracy. Before I came, I spoke with many friends and neighbors to seek proposals, comments, and criticism concerning government and administration, and pass them all onto the Congress.
Cui Yansheng says he is inspired by the blueprint drafted in the provincial government's new 5-year development plan, and he believes the new leadership team will guide the local people to a more promising and prosperous future. Shen Ting, CRI News.
Thank you very much, Shen Ting. If you have any comments or questions about anything you've heard here on Real Time China, just send us an email. Our email address is usbox@cri.com.cn. Stay tuned. More right after this. Wuxi's high-tech industry has benefited directly from the city's high-profile position as one of China's most developed cities. It has now become a major contributor to the city's rapid economic development. Here's our own Man Li.
Private companies offering high-tech goods and services have expanded greatly, both in size and number, in Wuxi over the past few years. There are currently over 360 high-tech private firms in the city, forming the engine for the city's rapid economic growth. Located in the Xishan Economic and Technological Development Zone, the Wuxi Dawei SciTech Company is one of the city's most outstanding private enterprises. 2 years ago, when it was set up, it was just a small firm with 20 staff members. But now, Dawei has developed into one of China's premier IT companies, with more than 200 employees and net capital of $13 million. Asked about the secret of Dawei's success, company head Bao Kewei says it is due to persistent endeavor in introducing new technologies, as well as a strong research and development team.
We are constantly making concerted efforts to attract the best personnel, because we believe talent guarantees the future success of an enterprise. For example, we recruit some of the most outstanding university graduates every year to infuse fresh blood into the company. And we provide them with a lot of training opportunities by collaborating with universities and renowned IT companies such as IBM and Intel.
Taking advantage of its strong team of workers and unyielding efforts in developing new products, the company has successfully completed dozens of high-tech projects over the past 2 years. It is also designated by the state as an industrial base for network security information products. Many private companies like Dawei have set the goal of building themselves into first-class high-tech enterprises since their founding. But there are also firms that were originally engaged in the processing industry and later shifted their focus to high-tech production in order to survive the fierce market competition. Zhao Ming, leader of a private processing enterprise, notes that its transformation to a high-tech manufacturer has become a primary concern for many private enterprises.
A lot of private enterprises like mine fail to go further after developing to a certain scale because they are technologically restricted and find it hard to compete with others. So it is vital for them to adjust their strategy and shift from capital accumulation to developing new technology and new products. Only by continuously improving their technical competence can an enterprise enhance its competitive edge and carve out a foothold in the market competition.
Over the past few years, Wuxi's municipal government has extended considerable help and support to private enterprises by offering preferential policies and timely and efficient services. It holds an annual high-tech trade fair for private enterprises each year, which provides an important link between researchers, inventors, and manufacturers. The introduction of high and new technology has helped the private business sector in Wuxi take a giant stride forward in recent years. Their annual industrial production output currently makes up 40% of the city's total. Moreover, many of them have begun to explore the international market and become major earners of foreign exchange for the city. Last year, exports by private enterprises in Wuxi earned $140 million, an increase of 300% over the previous year. Man Li, CRI News.
Thank you very much, Man Li. Well, it's now time to go on the road with our own Yun Feng. This story is entitled A City of Water Beauty. Yun Feng, over to you.
Songyuan is a small city by the beautiful Songhua River in northern Jilin Province. It borders the Inner Mongolia Autonomous Region in the west and Heilongjiang Province in the north. If you listened to our program last week, you may remember we visited Tonghua City, which is fabled for its spectacular mountain views. Songyuan, however, is richly endowed with hundreds of rivers and lakes and distinguishes itself for its charming water landscapes. The Chagan Lake, covering an area of 400 square kilometers in the Changgu Mongolian Autonomous County, is one of the 10 largest freshwater lakes in China and also home to some 70 species of fish. Its name is derived from the Mongolian word meaning white lake, as Chagan is densely covered with lush, translucent reeds. The lake area is not only a major fishery and reed production base in Jilin, but also one of the most famous scenic destinations in the region. The lake is surrounded by a vast sea of pasture and wetlands, which provide a paradise for many wild animals and plants. In recent years, the local government has installed wells of modern tourist facilities around the lake area and turned it into a pleasant and attractive tourist resort. It is an hour's ride to Chagan Lake from Songyuan City. The whole area is divided into several parts, including a fishing village, an ethnic Mongolian village, and a botanic garden. So visitors can entertain themselves with beautiful scenery and interesting activities and dampen their slavering taste buds with fresh aquatic food. But I think the best time to go there may be in July and August, when the annual Mongolian Folklore Tourist Festival is held along the lake. From Chagan Lake, you can also take a cruise to enjoy the idyllic grasslands and the rice fields along the 54-kilometer-long Yingsong Canal, which was dug 20 years ago and links Chagan Lake with the faraway Songhua River. 15 kilometers northeast of Chagan Lake are the ruins of the 1,000-year-old Tahu City, which was a thriving city during the Liao and Jin dynasties. The city is square in shape and surrounded by 6-meter-high earth walls. Today, we can still find many historical remains at the site, such as the city moat, watchtowers, terraces, workshops, and tombs. As one of the best-preserved city ruins from the Liao and Jin period, Tahu City attracts historians and visitors alike.
All right, thank you very much, Yunfeng. And with that, we've come to the end of this edition of Real Time China from the studios of China Radio International in Beijing. Before we end off, I want to remind you again, if you want to get in touch with us to let us know what you think of the program, just send us an email. Our email address is very simple. It's usbox@cri.com.cn. Again, usbox@cri.com.cn. So on behalf of the entire Real Time China team, this is Keith Powell wishing you well. Hope you join me again tomorrow for more news and features from China. Till then, so long and take care.